תגוסוק אינונה ברושותן אדוק קושו ניגים יחדית אינונה ישבית קימנה פת ביאר פוצי גרים מקונק נניה
Hello and welcome to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford and I am currently sitting on anchor and just left Sisimiut, Greenland. Spent the last couple of weeks in a boatyard getting the boat ready for this 100 plus day Arctic research expedition. So, Ocean Research Project is a nonprofit that I created after sailing around the Americas. Ocean Research Project is science, education, and exploration. So, preparing your boat for the Arctic. We left last year from Annapolis, Maryland, and we sailed up north to Greenland. It took us 23 days to get from Annapolis to Nuuk. Nuuk is the capital of Greenland. We are actually planning on bringing the boat back down from the Arctic, but as the expedition went on and as the research projects sort of grew in scope, it just ended up taking a lot longer to do the research than we thought it would, and the projects got bigger. It was sort of last year was sort of a test for this year, really, sort of a proving ground, really. But regardless, we found ourselves still in Greenland in September. And September 1st is when the sun starts setting. So that changes everything in the Arctic. You know, normally, when the sun goes down in the ocean, it doesn't really matter. You know, like who cares? You just keep sailing. You sail through the night just the same as you would sail through the day. It does take a little getting used to. Maybe the first time or second time you do it, it might be a little bit spooky or something, because you can see, well, if you have a good moon or on a moonlit night out in the ocean, you can see a little bit. Although you're not going to see something floating in the ocean right in front of you, more than likely. But on a night when you have clouds that block out the moon, or you have a new moon, you can't see 2 feet in front of your boat. You can't see 2 feet off of your boat. You're sailing in pitch blackness. But, you know, you get used to it pretty quickly. It's really not that big of a deal. So anyways, normally, I don't know, I've sailed at night hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of days. And actually, there are some nice things about sailing at night. For instance, it's easier to tell the direction of a freighter at night than it is in the daytime, because at night you can see its lights. They have a red light, a green light, and two white lights, and then another white light on the back. And by using those lights, especially those two white lights, you can really tell what direction the freighter is going. Now, this becomes a little less relevant with AIS, because you can just look at your chart plotter these days and say, oh, well, there's the freighter and it's going that direction. But before AIS, and if your AIS breaks or you just don't have it, the nighttime is actually in some ways helpful. Now, in other ways, it can be an absolute pain sailing at night. I remember one time I was sailing the south coast of England back in 2009, and I was trying to come into a port in some town, and it was near Brixham, if that for anybody from southern England. But I was trying to get in this inlet, and there was all these lights in the town, and, you know, cars driving around, and it was just a million lights. And I was trying to find the lights for the channel markers, and I'm sure the lights for the channel markers were there, but I could not tell the difference between the lights in the town, the lights of the cars. I mean, it was just lights everywhere. So I ended up not going into harbor that night, and I actually continued on to Brixham. By the time I arrived, the sun had come up, because it was a few hours away, and I just anchored there. But anyways, you know, sailing at night is something that any blue water sailor is used to doing. It's not a big deal. It's just part of life at sea. But in the Arctic, everything changes. And mostly because of ice. Ice is obviously not going to be charted. Ice does not have an AIS signal. You have no idea where the ice is. And the ice could be almost any size you imagine. I mean, the ice could be anything from the size of like a massive office building to the size of a shopping cart or a basketball. And it's sometimes all over the place. And another issue here in Greenland and in a lot of the Arctic is for the most part uncharted. And even in Greenland, some places are charted, but typically only the main towns, the ports. Sometimes some of the more major cruising lanes, where more ship traffic is going to be. But even, you know, around the capital of Nuuk, you can go 20 miles or 10 miles and find yourself in an area that's uncharted. So you got rocks, and rocks hiding all over the place. So long story short, in Greenland, in the Northwest Passage, and I certainly hope you don't get stuck in the Northwest Passage too late in the season, although we'll talk about the Northwest Passage on some other day, it's very important that by nighttime, you got your anchor in the dirt. And this changes your ability to make time. You got a 12-hour day. In Greenland, you can lose as much as 1 hour of sunlight every single day when it first starts to change, starting around September 1st. So it goes from 24-hour daylight to 12-hour daylight pretty quickly, you know, within a couple of weeks, basically. And and that's really something to get used to. So anyways, we got up to Greenland last year, and as I said, we were doing some projects. A lot of the projects we're doing this year, we were working with NASA's Ocean Melting Greenland, and we're working with the Smithsonian's Environmental Research Center doing ocean acidification stuff, and we're doing some microplastics trawls, working with Five Gyres and Sea Education Association. And so we're doing some of the similar stuff, but it was also a bit of a testing ground, especially with NASA. NASA scientists are top scientists, and we're telling them that we can collect professional data. And so we had to prove it to them before we could even talk to them about getting any kind of funding. So last year, we didn't get any funding from them. And understandably so. Scientists are skeptical by nature. A scientist will try to prove something is wrong often before they try to prove it's right. And, you know, that's a good quality to have when it comes to looking at information and trying to be really particular about that information. And you got to remember also, these scientists have spent years and years and years building a reputation. And that reputation could be destroyed if they write one scientific paper that ends up being false, if they write it with bad data. So scientists are very afraid, I guess you could say, of getting bad data that might tell them something about Greenland or whatever it is they're researching that is just not true. So you got to prove it to them. You got to build a track record, and you got to prove yourself. And it's sort of sometimes a hard pill to swallow, but it's an understandable situation. So anyways, we did more data collection and more data collection. We were that particular project, the NASA scientists, as I mentioned in the last episode, they believe that a warmer, saltier water column is coming up from the Atlantic about 200 to 300 meters down and eating the glaciers from underneath. As the Atlantic continues to warm, this column could potentially also be warming. And that's what we're trying to figure out. We're trying to figure out what's going on, what is going on here. So we did a lot of mapping, and we got a way up to 7819 north. It's about 700 miles from the North Pole, and collected data along the entire way. But, as things happen, the seasons change. We got to Greenland a little later than I would like to, because it was hard to get out of the boatyard, and that's really what we're focusing on today is, they say the hardest part about winning a race is getting to the start line. And, you know, it's the hardest part about doing these expeditions sometimes isn't just the expedition. It's just getting the boat ready and just getting it so you can get out there and do it. And, you know, it's like it never ends, man. You can fix one thing and two more things break. It's just this endless cycle of maintenance. And it can be so frustrating, you know, especially if you have like a bad engine on your boat and your engine is breaking all the time. And it's just, oh my God, I have a love-hate relationship with diesel engines. Because when you need them and they work, you know, you're in some sketchy inlet and you fire up the engine and, you know, it gets you away from the rocks. It keeps you safe. I mean, you love the thing. But you could be in that same situation and try to fire up the engine and it doesn't do anything. Or it could leave you stranded. One time I was my engine broke when I was 200 miles up the Gambia River in West Africa. And you can imagine that's a pretty bad place to have your engine break on you. I ended up making it out of the river in one piece. But anyways, boat maintenance, it just never ends. So last year, we ended up finding a place in Sisimiut. That's where we left the boat, the second largest town in Greenland. It's about 9 miles north of the Arctic Circle. And we came in there and, you know, we said, hey, you know, do you guys got room for us? You know, by now it's October and it's getting cold. Like it's 20 degrees outside and we didn't have any heaters on our boat. Well, we had heaters, but the heaters broke, and I couldn't get anything working. So it was, like, ridiculously cold on our boat. And, you know, we were talking to each other and, like, breathing out giant clouds of, well, it looked like we were smoking, you know, just huge clouds when we were talking. And it's almost silly at that point. So it was freezing cold. Now, we were continuing doing research even in mid-September. And, you know, when the sun goes down, you go slow, so you can only operate during the day. It takes a while. And then you get bad weather on top of that, you know. I mean, the weather deteriorates maybe for 2 days, 3 days. You're stuck on anchor, hiding behind some little rock, you know, that doesn't even have a name, or a cluster of rocks. I mean, they're islands, but they're little rocky islands, uninhabited, uncharted. There's nothing there. There's no reason to even land a dinghy and go to shore, because what are you going to look at? A bunch of rock? You know, a bunch of moss? So, and a lot of them don't even have moss on them. A lot of them are just rocks. So it took a while. We show up at the boatyard in Sisimiut, and they say, nah, man, we don't have any room for you. And they say, wait, okay, come back the next day. So, you know, like, oh, man, we really hope we can get hauled out here. There is a couple other places you can get hauled out, one of them being Asiat, which is north of Sisimiut, but they want like $10,000 to haul you out in Asiat for the winter. I can get my boat hauled out in Annapolis for the winter cheaper than $10,000. I mean, that's just crazy prices. And that's by far the most expensive place in Greenland to haul your boat out. So that really wasn't much of an option. And you can go down to Nuuk, to the capital. There is this kind of industrial boatyard. But anyways, we wanted to get Sisimiut. So we came back the next day, and they said, okay, we'll make room. And I thought, okay, well, they'll make room for us. That's nice. And so I stayed there. The boat was tied off to a gnarly seawall with broken wood sticking out of it, and the ladder had been ripped off, so I had to make like a rope ladder to get on and off the boat at low tide. And anyways, as I was sitting there, the guy pulled up in a backhoe, this big, giant backhoe, and turned the backhoe, opened up the big old scoop on it, and just crushed this old wooden sailboat and just demolished the thing. And that's how they were making room for us. They demolished like a 50, 60 foot, you know, 80-year-old wooden fishing boat. And granted, this fishing boat would have sunk if you put it in the water. I mean, it was just taking up space, basically. But yeah, that's how they made space for us. So we left the boat. You know, you winterize the boat the best you can, but there's always problems. You come back 8 months later. I mean, it's a long winter in the Arctic. So, you know, what are you going to do? You leave the boat. There's no reason to come back when the water is still frozen. So you come back, and we came back in June 1st. And you just hope that the boat is still going to be in decent condition. But a boat needs attention. You know, and if you don't give the boat the amount of attention that it thinks it needs, it starts to slowly commit suicide. You know, it's a boat is like a spoiled child. You know, if you don't give it attention, it has a hissy fit and it starts breaking itself. And so, you know, we got back. I knew there was going to be all sorts of problems. I knew that, you know, well, I knew that I didn't know how many issues there would be, but there would be plenty of them. And it's always that way. I haven't been giving my boat the attention it wanted. And so it was going to make me pay for it in the boatyard. And it very much did that. When we get back, we'll talk about, first off, tell you about all the craziness of working on a boat in Greenland in the boatyard. And all the fun involved in that situation. And also how you yourself can prepare your boat or the things that you need to think about when sailing off to the Arctic, the Antarctic, or really any remote part of the planet. You know, it's not like sailing to the Caribbean or sailing up and down the East Coast. But I wouldn't let, you know, it can look daunting, it can sound daunting, but I wouldn't be too intimidated either by the idea of taking your boat to the ends of the earth, so to speak. I know that's a bit of a dramatic way to put it. But, you know, sailing to these regions, it's, if I can do it, anybody can. I mean, I'm not Peter Blake, you know. I'm just a guy with a boat and a bit of ambition. But anyways, we got a commercial break. Stick around, and we'll be back shortly.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Smartest long-tailed catch you'll find is ho way, ho way, you must hunt. She's the lady say of the salty times. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run to me. Hey, rig a jig, she's jaunting free.
We're living our dream.
We're living simply and sustainably aboard a sailboat traveling the world.
We're visiting remote communities and raising awareness about the health of our oceans.
We're trawling the oceans for microplastic particles.
We're checking on the health of coral reefs and phytoplankton populations.
We're monitoring marine mammals and examining synthetic materials in fish.
We're Bass and Jamie Van Jones.
And we're proof that citizen science can save the world.
Hear all about our amazing adventures in salty times every week here on Boat Radio.
Stay salty.
You.
And the board of the ladies say, clear away the tack and let the boat join run.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames. From the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures, I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, sitting on anchor in a little anchorage here in a place called Godhaven, although that's a very bad, probably American pronunciation. I think it's more like Godhaven in Danish. And the Greenlandic word is something like Tarasuwak, which I'm sure is an absolute horrible pronunciation of it. But anyways, it's a beautiful little town. This used to be a big whaling port at one point during the whaling days. It's kind of lost some of its esteem since then, but it's located on the bottom of Disco Island, and it's Greenland Day. We are here hoping to celebrate Greenland Day, which everything is closed, but it's a nice place, tons of mosquitoes, and but a very well-protected harbor. So, preparing your boat. We showed up this year to the Arctic, not really knowing what we were going to find with our boat, what condition it was going to be in, and so on. I had some concerns, to say the least. I mean, I don't like leaving my boat for like 8 days, let alone 8 months. You know, I live on this boat. I mean, this isn't just a research vessel. This is also my home. So for me, leaving this boat in Greenland meant I was basically homeless. And so is Nicole. Nicole lives on this boat too. Nicole is the, if I am the captain of the vessel, Nicole is the captain of the research. She's the one with the science background. But, you know, we left the boat. It had to be done. We didn't have a choice. Now, I tried my best to communicate with the boatyard, and in the beginning, there was some communication, but it was all about how much money they wanted from me. You know, they sent me a bill, basically, and so I wired them a bunch of money, and I made the mistake. I wired them all the money for the entire winter right off the bat, and after that, you know, I asked them, hey, did you get the money, or how's my boat doing, or anything like that. I never heard anything back. So it was complete silence, and I didn't have anybody to check up on my boat, and so here I am in the United States, like, you know, sort of nervous and worried that, you know, who knows what's going on, and I can't get a hold of anybody, and my boat is thousands of miles away in a little funky boatyard in Greenland, and you can imagine the sort of the stress involved in that situation. But I did talk to Bob Shepton. Bob Shepton is an Arctic legend. He has kept his boat in the same boatyard, and he told me, look, man, don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. So I get to the boat, and the first thing I notice is four of my stanchions are broken, are bent all sideways, and apparently they moved my boat at some point in the middle of the winter, and something, a strap broke or something broke, and it busted four of my stanchions. This would be a much more difficult situation on a fiberglass boat, because on a fiberglass boat, the stanchions are bolted to the fiberglass, so you're going to rip the fiberglass out of the deck along with the stanchion, and that makes for a pretty difficult repair job, especially when you're in a part of the world that is colder than the minimum for resin. Resin doesn't really like to harden anything less than 50 degrees, and you know, sometimes it's 50 degrees, but sometimes it's not. So, it makes it a little difficult. With a steel boat, I have a steel boat, it makes it a bit easier. You know, something, rip something off, you just weld it back on again. And they did do that. But I also noticed a big giant bulge in my rudder, which my rudder is steel, but it's encapsulated in fiberglass, in resin, really. And I'm guessing the reason that they did this is to keep down the weight, although I'm not really sure why else would they have encapsulated steel rudder. I don't really know besides that. But water had gotten in at some point, and usually I keep the boat in the water for the winter. And the water, even in Annapolis, it gets pretty cold, but the water actually insulates the boat. It actually keeps it warmer. Let's say the temperature in Annapolis drops down to 15 degrees Fahrenheit. Then, okay, whatever. The water is still 29 degrees or 30 degrees. So for the boat to be on the hard and exposed to these extreme conditions, you know, it can get down to negative 10, negative 20. It gets cold. So, you know, the water expanded and it busted maybe about half of one side of my rudder off. The steel was fine, but so it wasn't that big of a deal. But still, it's just another thing. You show up at your boat and your rudder looks all bulged out and you big chunks of fiberglass falling off of it. And you're like, oh, all right, now what? I also knew that I had to change the cutlass bearing. The cutlass bearing is pretty worn out. The cutlass bearing is an important part of your propeller shaft. It sort of holds your propeller shaft in place. In my case, on my boat, where it exits the boat. So I had some concerns. I knew the diameter of my propeller shaft, 1¼ inches, but I wasn't sure about the outer diameter. Well, luckily, that didn't end up being too big of a problem. But there was a bigger problem. I pulled the shaft out of the boat, and it wasn't just that the cutlass bearing was worn, but the propeller shaft itself was also worn down. So it's like, oh man, what are you going to do now? You know, I mean, I can't get an inch and a quarter shaft in Greenland. I mean, it's the wrong system. You know, it's not metric. Not to mention, it would probably cost a small fortune. So I put the new cutlass bearing in and threw the shaft back in, and you know, it's a little loose, but there's nothing I can really do about it. And when I get back to the States, I can, you know, I can deal with it. But you know, what are you going to do? We also had to install this $25,000 sonar system so we can map the seafloor down to 6,000 feet. And it's just the craziest thing. I mean, the transducer alone is like the size of a cinder block and is 40 pounds. Imagine bolting something to the bottom of your boat that's the size of a cinder block and weighs 40 pounds. You know, so we were lucky enough that the boatyard had a guy, a welder, and a really good welder, and he was able to build a housing for this transducer to, first off, protect it from ice, but also to make it a bit more hydrodynamic. Although the thing is huge, man. I mean, I could use this thing as a rudder if I could only turn it. I mean, it is just this ridiculous, massive housing. And it was going pretty well. You know, the guy saw it. He came up with a design, and you know, we worked together on it, and he was doing good work. And then he got into an argument with his boss, and he decided to quit. And he's in the middle of making this thing, and he quits his job. And he's the only guy at this boatyard that can do this type of stuff, this type of welding work. And you know, I got to give the guy credit. He came back the next day, and he said to me in broken English, you know, I started this project, and I'm going to finish it, even though I quit my job, you know. And so he did. He finished the project. He did a beautiful job. I now have this gigantic housing with this massive heavy transducer in it, bolted and welded onto the bottom of my boat. But it's a necessary evil, so to speak. I mean, this is a research expedition. You know, this is the types of things, everything is sacrificial to some degree. I mean, obviously the boat itself is not sacrificial, but if I lose a half a knot of speed due to adding some scientific equipment, then so be it. You know, that's just the way it goes. So I wanted to get a cage around the propeller to protect it from ice. You know, you can have ice. We're working in super icy areas. And you can imagine sort of plowing through fairly slowly, let's say about 3 knots, 2.5 knots, through ice that's so dense there's no way to go around it. The ice itself is made up of chunks, anything from the size of a baseball to the size of a refrigerator, or bigger sometimes. But you have to go through this stuff. The bow of your boat is going to push the majority of this ice either port or starboard. But some of this ice travels down the length of your boat, under your boat, and sort of bounces as it moves along, which of course, if you have any transducers sticking out, like a forward-looking sonar, that's something that can get broken by the ice. Eventually, that chunk of ice, let's say this chunk of ice is the size of a beach ball, that beach ball piece of ice bounces down your boat and hits your spinning propeller. And then boom, there goes one of your blades. You just lost a blade of your propeller. You're in the middle of a fjord. You're surrounded by ice. Often these fjords don't have much wind, or they're blowing a gale. It's like one or the other. And now you're stuck. You're stranded. Like, what are you going to do? So we had to build a cage. I asked the guys at the boatyard to build the cage in the winter when I was gone, and they sort of said, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of language gaps, too. I mean, you know, maybe they didn't completely understand me. I don't know. But I wasn't very surprised when I showed up and the cage wasn't built. And I was actually a little happy about it because I didn't negotiate a price ahead of time, and I have no idea what they would have charged me. So one of my crew, Dana, the third mate, I set him on the task of going dumpster diving, basically, and pulling metal, you know, steel pipe out of the trash and repurposing it for this cage. And so he bent the steel by hand using using the cradle, he jammed it into the cradle that holds the boat up in these holes and just bent it and then welded it to the boat. And it's a really funky looking cage, and it's definitely slowing my boat down at least a half a knot. But, you know, it's a small price to pay. I mean, what are you going to do if you lose that propeller? We have to do something. But it is sort of funny to spend all this time with trying to make so many aspects of the boat nice and proper, and then just bend a bunch of metal and weld it onto your boat all funky and ugly. But it's definitely a cheap solution, if anything. We've had to do quite a bit more with some of the scientific equipment. There's a variety of different stuff we've been installing, and there's also a variety of issues. It's like around every corner is another issue, and equipment that we were using last year that worked perfectly fine all of a sudden doesn't work this year, and you know, it's just all that headache, really. But we've made good traction with all of it. Now, the sails were a different story. I had two sails made for me a few years ago. We didn't use them in 2014 because we sailed a different boat across the ocean, the Harbor 29 across the Pacific. So they're only used a couple seasons. The foresail has been fine. I mean, it's been what you expect for a brand new foresail. I mean, you should be able to get 10,000 miles out of a suit of sails before you even start having any real issues. The mainsail has been ripping since day one. A company called Point Sails in San Diego, California, built them. And from what I found out before I left from another sailmaker in Annapolis, is that they built them, the mainsail, out of the wrong material. Which is like, you gotta be kidding me. So it's been ripping vertically. I've been getting vertical rips all over my sail. I think I probably have 20 patches on my mainsail at this point. Some of them are like 3-foot rips. So I had to break out the mainsail and hand sewing thread and sail repair tape and go to work. I ended up patching 8 rips on my mainsail in the boatyard. And a lot of these rips were things that happened at the end of last year. Some of them I never even seen before or noticed. But as I say, you know, sometimes, and I don't put it in the sail. This sail was just unbelievably built out of the wrong material. But, you know, other things, like I show up and I look at my engine. My engine ran pretty good last year, and there's a bracket that holds the alternator onto the engine, and the whole bracket is cracked in half. Like, it wasn't cracked in half when I got to Sissy Mood last year, because if it was cracked in half, I would have known. The alternator wouldn't have been spinning right. The belt would have been screaming. It's like, how did this, you know, this is that whole where a boat is like a spoiled child and needs a lot of attention or commits suicide. It's like, how in the world did this bracket, like, magically break itself? It's a metal bracket. You know, and then my pressure pump for my water system, that breaks. And, that worked perfectly fine, too. And then I turn it on, and hose clamps are popping off. And I'm like, what's, you know, and then wiring here and wiring there all of a sudden doesn't work. My batteries are no longer holding a charge, which I don't know. I mean, I've been told that a battery isn't going to freeze in the Arctic, and that, you know, you really shouldn't worry yourself about ruining a battery in the Arctic. And maybe they're talking about like gel batteries or AGM batteries. I have flooded batteries. I've had gels. I've had AGMs. I've had 6-volt golf cart batteries. I've had every different type of battery you can imagine. And I've kind of gone through this whole circle right back to where I started, which is with flooded batteries. And the reason I have flooded batteries is because they're cheap. And that's about it. You know, I mean, I think AGMs are better. I like gels also. But a flooded battery can take a lot of abuse. And they're cheaper to replace, and you can replace them anywhere. And I had to replace them because they weren't holding a charge anymore. Buying batteries in Greenland is... The gels were insane. Like, they do sell gels here, but they were, like, insanely expensive. You know, like $1,000 for one battery, like a Group 31. Like, you know, it's just crazy. The flooded batteries were expensive, too, but they weren't nearly as bad. So you just sort of go through the boat and you say, oh, well, this was working last year, but it's not now. And, oh, this was working last year. But, you know, it's like this every winter, man, or every spring, I should say. You know, you winterize the boat And you go to turn it on in the spring, and something isn't right. And, you leave a boat for 8 months, and what do you expect? I'm certainly not complaining. This is just the way it is. This is the way boats are. There's a lot of maintenance. So anyways, got to go to a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how you can prepare your boat for Arctic sailing.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
The smartest long-tailed catch you'll find is ho-way, ho-way, you must done. She's the lady say of the salty times. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run to me. Hey, rig-a-jig, she's a jaunting free.
We're living our dream.
We're living simply and sustainably aboard a sailboat traveling the world.
We're visiting remote communities and raising awareness about the health of our oceans.
We're trawling the oceans for microplastic particles.
We're checking on the health of coral reefs and phytoplankton populations.
We're monitoring marine mammals and examining synthetic materials in fish.
We're Bass and Jamie Van Jones.
And we're proof that citizen science can save the world.
Hear all about our amazing adventures in salty times every week here on Boat Radio.
Stay salty.
You.
And the board of the ladies say, clear away the track and let the boat join run.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames. From the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures, I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, currently on anchor in Godhaven, which is a little town in southern Disco Island. And today we're talking about how to get your boat ready for the Arctic and all the trials and tribulations that I've been dealing with. So, your boat, what do you need to think about? What do you need to have? How do you prepare your boat for this sort of an expedition? I think one of the things you also have to do is prepare your mind, prepare yourself mentally. It can be a bit of a daunting scenario when you're sitting back in your hometown and you're looking at a chart and you see that you have to cross the entire Labrador Sea to get to this rocky country of Greenland or the Northwest Passage. And it can be intimidating, but you play the weather. Look, man, you can get hit by a storm in the Atlantic. You can get hit by a storm in the Caribbean, the South Pacific. It happens anywhere. So, you shouldn't be going out in the ocean if you're not ready both mentally to deal with heavy weather and if your boat isn't ready for heavy weather. Now, this particular episode is not about heavy weather, although I'll probably talk about that later and possibly dedicate a whole episode to it. But what I want to talk about at this point is the things that you need to think about when getting your boat ready for the Arctic, and things to keep in mind, the things you might want to purchase, and so on. So, first off and foremost, communication. Communication gets very difficult in Greenland. It is much easier in Greenland than it is in the Northwest Passage, and even the Northwest Passage could be possibly a bit easier than a place like Antarctica, for instance. In Greenland, you have a population of 56,000 people. The Danish government has built a series of cell towers, cell phone towers, all up and down West Greenland and in some parts of East Greenland. So right now, today, 93% of Greenlandic people own a cell phone. And that's how they get their internet. They have smartphones, and they get their internet through their phone. And as you can imagine, it also causes a variety of issues when you have an ancient culture like the Inuit that is now sort of being exposed to all the fun and glory and craziness and pop culture and negativity and so on that is the internet. But there is no free Wi-Fi in Greenland. There is no Wi-Fi that I know of in the Northwest Passage outside of maybe just a couple of towns, places like Cambridge Bay, for instance. But in Greenland, there is no free Wi-Fi. You can't go to a coffee shop. You're not going to sit down and break out your laptop and log into Starbucks, or there isn't Starbucks either, but you have to pay for it. And very few places even allow you to pay for the Wi-Fi. You have to go to a place called the Seaman's Home. A Seaman's Home is basically a hotel, and you'll find them kind of scattered around Greenland in the bigger towns. And these places you can go in, and it's expensive. You know, it's like $10 an hour, and the download speeds and upload speeds are incredibly slow. You know, you're not going to be watching Netflix. Even if you did watch Netflix, it would cost you a fortune. It would cost you $15 to watch one movie. So you cannot rely on free Wi-Fi. It just doesn't exist. You can get these a hotspot, and that's what we did this year. We got this like Greenland hotspot. It's no different than like a Verizon hotspot or AT&T hotspot, but it only works around the towns. And, of course, there's a lot of space in between some of these towns. And it's a 3G, north of Upernavik especially. It's only 3G. Which, whatever, I don't really care. You know, I'm just happy to have anything. So, you're really going to turn to sat-based communications. Iridium is the only game in town. All right, if you want to cross the Atlantic Ocean on the more traditional routes, you can use Globalstar or Emersat or any of these others. But when you go off the beaten path and sail to the Arctic or the Antarctic, Iridium is the only system that's going to work. Now, Iridium is a bit more expensive. The minutes are expensive. The phones are expensive. But other businesses have been tapping into Iridium for their communications equipment. For instance, there's a company called Delorme. InReach is the device. And this is one of the more economic Iridium-based systems. This is a system that allows text-based communication. You can send text messages back and forth. I don't know, I think maybe it's 50 cents or 25 cents a text, something along these lines. It has a tracking device that you can use, and it's actually a really good tracking device. I have used one of these once on a boat delivery, a sailboat delivery from Panama Canal to San Diego. And I was really impressed by the information on the tracking device. It gave people who are monitoring it a lot of different information: boat speed, max speed, average speed, direction, hours. I believe there was one for hours underway. So it's a nice system because it's relatively cheap. I think you can pick one up for, I don't know, $200, maybe $300 tops, and it's relatively inexpensive plan. So that's a pretty good system. Now, there is Spot. Now, you guys are probably familiar with the Spot tracking system. This is one of the more economical systems that exist. But the problem with the Spot tracking system is that it uses the Globalstar network, which doesn't really work in the Arctic. My favorite system is PredictWind. You can use a Iridium Go. Iridium Go is basically a satellite hotspot. Now, do not think that you're going to be able to get online and like surf the web, because the communication speeds, the download speeds are literally slower than the original America's Online. But using a Iridium Go connected with a PredictWind's offshore program, you can send emails, you can Uh Okay, somebody called me on the VHF. I had to answer him, and he probably heard it for a second in the background. The Iridium Go, coupled with the Predict Wind Offshore, also really helps give quality weather forecasts. So you can get the GRIB files, it overlays on the program, you can get wind, you can get pressure, you can get rain, you can get temperature. It's a more expensive system, and it involves buying a package from Predict Wind. It involves buying a Iridium Go, which is also, I don't know, $1,000, $1,200. Iridium Go is temperamental. You have to hit the reset button quite often. Sometimes you have to take the batteries out of the unit. It can be a bit of a pain, to be honest, and even with the latest firmware update, it's still a bit of a pain. But it is the best system that's out there, and it's the system that I use. So you do need to keep that in mind. There is a variety of different systems. Every year, there's like double the amount of weather-based GRIB file systems out there. I've just used the PredictWind for a long time, so that's why, you know, I say it's a good system. Now, the further north you get, your compass isn't going to work well. And once you get up to, like, in the Northwest Passage, or when we're doing our main research up by Conock, when I sailed through the Northwest Passage, my compass basically pointed 180 degrees, pointed due south, no matter which way I turned the boat. Last year, up by Conock, it pointed 263 degrees, no matter which way I pointed the boat. So you get so close to the magnetic North Pole that it throws off your compass's ability to work properly. This also affects your autopilot. Your autopilot goes kind of crazy. You know, like you can imagine, you're trying to steer a course of, let's say, 70 degrees, and your screen on your autopilot says 263, no matter which way you turn your boat. So autopilots don't work very well in the high Arctic because of the compass just gets all screwed up. Now, you can also use a wind vane. A wind vane is a great option for an autopilot system. It takes no power, and it does not care about compass courses because it uses the wind to sail the boat. A monitor wind vane is the best servo pendulum style wind vane on the market. Hydro vane is a very famous auxiliary rudder style wind vane. And auto helm is the wind vane I'm using. It's auxiliary rudder. The problem is you cannot use a servo pendulum wind vane if you have hydraulic steering, and I have hydraulic steering. I'll talk more about wind vanes at some other point. Now, if you're coming from the United States, you got to think about the whole imperial versus metric. You're not going to be able to find, you know, screw 3/8 screws or quarter by 20 machine screws because the rest of the world is metric. So do keep that in mind. Bring a lot of extra nuts, bolts, and screws with you. And this is the same if you travel just about anywhere outside of the United States. You sail to Europe, you're going to be dealing with the same issue. But in the Arctic, there's really, really no imperial sizes. It's like, you know, a lot of metric. Also, you want to bring spare parts, you know, and bring as many spare parts as you can. Bring them for the engine. Bring them for everything. But, of course, there's an issue here of how much can you afford to bring. You know, how much money do you have? If you have the money and you have the room on your boat, by all means, bring as many spares as humanly possible. Because the reality is, you're not going to find it. If something breaks, you're probably not going to be able to replace it. If you don't have one with you, you can try to get it mailed to, but getting something mailed to Greenland, for instance, can take weeks. And trying to get something mailed to the Northwest Passage, you might be 1,000 miles away or 500 miles away from the closest place you can get it mailed to when you're in the Northwest Passage. And if you're in Antarctica, you ain't nothing you're going to get mailed down there. You know, what are you going to do, mail it to a penguin? You know, so try to bring as many spare parts, especially for the engine, water pumps, you know, fuel filters, oil filters. Those are all the basics. Oil, you know, you can't necessarily find the type of oil you want. Like in Greenland, all they have is 1540. My Perkins runs off a 30 weight, a straight 30 weight. That doesn't exist here in Greenland. So if you use a special type of oil, you better bring a whole lot of it with you. I actually brought in a spare injector pump this year, which is quite expensive, but you don't want your injector pump breaking on you in some middle of some fjord, and I bit the bullet. There's also no marinas. So this is something interesting. There isn't a single marina in all of Greenland. There are seawalls. Some of the towns have them. The towns south of Upernavik, north of Upernavik, there are no seawalls even. All you can do is drop an anchor. And these seawalls are gnarly. And, you know, this is Greenland is not a place for a fiberglass yacht with a beautiful paint job, a nice shiny all grip, you know, freshly varnished teak tow rails. You're going to get scratches on your boat. I would suggest bringing the biggest, roundest fenders you can possibly get. And you can get some here in Greenland. They sell some big fenders. And you want to stay off that seawall the best you can. And also, people will tie off to your boat. You leave your boat for like 45 minutes to go get some groceries and come back. You could have like four boats tied off to you. Now, you could have like a 50-ton fishing vessel tied off to you. I mean, we had that happen to us in Sisimiut. We had three fishing vessels tied off to us, and we were in the middle. We were like a fish sandwich, basically. And these boats were all much heavier than I was. So you want to have a lot of fenders. There are no charts for the most part. There is some charted places, but for the most part, especially off the beaten path, there are no soundings. So they're charts, but you're just not going to have soundings on them. So there's rocks hidden everywhere. You can get a forward-looking sonar. Now, this is a great option. Simrad, Lowrance, and what's the third? Navico bought B&G. Anyways, these companies all have the same type of forward-looking sonar. You can pick it up for about $800. Now you have a transducer that's hanging out. There's no way to protect this transducer. Mine got cracked last year. I fully expect to lose the transducer this year to a piece of ice. They're made to break off. It's not going to sink the boat, but it protrudes. It's a protruding transducer, and it's just hanging out there waiting for a piece of ice to take it off. So I would not suggest buying the fancy 3D forward-looking sonar because they got very expensive transducers. You're better off just getting an $800 model. You can get food and fuel just about anywhere in any of these towns. There is one supermarket chain that exists basically throughout all of Greenland, and it has diesel, gasoline, and kerosene, three pumps in all these towns, and all the food is Danish food. And I think it's pretty good. You know, it's all stocked with Danish food. Ice protection, you know, I wouldn't go crazy trying to, like, thicken the hull, you know, extra, you know, adding metal or whatever. You know, maybe if you have a fiberglass boat, you can add a little bit of metal up on your bow, but I wouldn't go crazy with it. You know, just keep an eye out, and don't go through the ice fast. If you're going through ice, slow your boat down at 2.5 knots. I would suggest putting a cage around your propeller if you're going to be going through a lot of ice, because you can, you know, risk losing your prop. But if you're not going to be pushing through a lot of ice, it's probably not worth your while, because that cage is going to slow you down quite a bit. There also, bring spare sails. If you have spare sails, bring them. There's no sail makers in Greenland, so, or the Northwest Passage, or Antarctica, so bring as many sails as you can. And if you got a propane system and you're from the United States, you're going to have one heck of a time trying to get that propane tank filled in Greenland. You're more likely going to have to switch over to their system. So just be prepared for that. If you want to see more information about our expedition, we are putting up videos, little 8-10 minute videos every couple of weeks. There's also a blog and you know, more information at www.oceanresearchproject.org. And you know, don't be intimidated, man. You can sail to the Arctic. You can do anything. Nothing can stop you. Only you can stop you. And don't let fear control you. You have to learn to control fear, or fear will control you. You know, and I understand, you know, it seems intimidating, but it's a beautiful place. And yeah, there's a lot of fog, so bring a good radar. Anyways, thanks for following along this week. Next week, we're going to get into the expedition, dodging ice and fjords, and putting out sensors and all the craziness that is a research expedition. Thanks for listening.
Yeah! see through.
Kau yang nak kau rauk. Kau yang nak ikhlas. Kau yang nak syuk.